now. Detonate the reality bomb!
Change has come for America.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
Is the singularity near?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
To be as gods, you know, catapults to propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed, split-level location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
This sounds like something from a movie, like something that really couldn't happen in America, but it does. Forced guardianship, something that affects our nation's seniors, people who are deemed incapacitated by the courts and then have their rights taken away. And sadly, there is a group of people out there, professional guardians, who appear to be taking advantage of this system. Welcome to A View from the Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert. Our guest is a gentleman who can speak to this issue. We got in contact because of a new book just published by a gentleman named Michael Larson titled Guardianship, How Judges and Lawyers Steal Your Money. He had found an interview that I conducted about 10 years ago, actually Sharon and I together, with a woman named Janet Phelan, who had a similar experience. And he incorporated some of the information from that interview, which, to be honest, I had almost forgotten about, into the book. Michael is unavailable. He's traveling to Japan as we record this on February 21st, but he put me in touch with our guest, who, again, has had an experience a little too personal and close for comfort, but has come out the other side, and hopefully by sharing this information can be of some help. We welcome Charles Pascal to the program. Charlie, this is...
Thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate it, Derek.
Well, this is a topic that as the population ages, the baby boom generation gets into its senior years, will probably become more and more popular. And it is tragic to think that there are people out there who are having decisions made for them without their knowledge or consent or the family's consent. How did you become acquainted with this concept of legal guardianship?
Well, it started in the beginning in 2006. What happened was basically my wife, Heidi Pascal, had a mother. Her name was Marcy, M-A-R-C-Y, Dudek, and I will spell it, capital D-U-D-E-C-K, and she lived in Nevada. And Heidi and I lived in California. But when Heidi's father died, and his name was Michael, Heidi had asked her brother, Lance Dudek, L-A-N-C-E Dudek, to come and take care of the mother because she needed care. So naturally, we thought that would work out, and Lance was kind of very close to homeless at the time when he had been evicted from his apartment in San Diego, but we thought maybe taking care of the mother and living in the house would be an excellent second chance for him. And so he came to Nevada, and at first, things seemed to be normal, but all of a sudden, some very strange letters start arriving to us from Lance's girlfriend. Her name was Marissa, telling us that there was domestic abuse, et cetera, et cetera. And we tried to get to the bottom of it. And the next thing we knew, Marissa, the girlfriend herself, had called the police department, and the police came and saw that she had been beaten by Lance. So the police did the right thing. They actually removed Mrs. Dudek from the home, and they put her into a nursing facility. And that is where our nightmare began. And how it began is this. We flew to Nevada immediately after this, being informed of the news, and we found that Marcy was living in a home called Chancellor Gardens. Now, that's a key to the story. So fix on Chancellor for just a moment,
okay?
Because 2 years later, Chancellor was found to be in violation of state of Nevada health laws, and the state of Nevada Health Department, this is in the Las Vegas Sun and Review Journal, had recorded 108 violations, everything from throwing patients' medication away to having elders wander off and actually die in the street. This is all in the newspaper, so what I'm saying, there isn't any supposition. It's documented. All right. So once we saw the condition that Heidi's mother was living in, knowing that in 2006 she hadn't been bathed, she said they didn't feed her, she had lost a lot of weight, we immediately tried to go to court to petition to get Marcy to come to California, where Heidi and I could take care of her. Well, there was a hearing master who now, I will tell you, in 2015 was banned from ever hearing another guardianship case again. Hmm. His name was John Norheim. That's, again, you can refer to Colton Lockhead, Las Vegas Review Journal, for that, and Steve Miller. We'll get to all that later. But anyway, he says, well, he started, almost laughed at us in an arrogant way in court November 3rd and said, you're an out-of-state resident, and Nevada has an out-of-state law that out-of-state residents cannot be guardians of their loved ones.
Hmm.
So that was the big obstacle. So right there, here you have two people. I have a master's degree in counseling. I've got a good job. I'm told that my wife and I can't take our mother-in-law, even though we could provide. We'd even gotten an apartment direct. We live on a boat, but we'd gotten an apartment directly above the boat where Heidi could have stayed there. We could have taken care of the mother and done it for a fraction of the cost, which was about to come. So the court had an evidentiary hearing, but it was stacked all the way with John Norheim, the commissioner's, making snide remarks all through the hearing and so on and so forth. And finally, they appointed a guardian. And I'm going to spell this name because this guardian has actually pled no contest to a couple of criminal cases. His name is Jared, J-A-R-E-D, E as in Edward, Schaefer, S-H-A-F-E-R. And I'll spell it radio because I'm a radio operator as well. Sierra, S for Sierra, H for Hotel, A for Alpha, F for Foxtrot, E for Echo, R for Radio, Schaefer. He gets appointed as guardian. Well, immediately we start finding out that the large amounts of money are being removed from the Dudak Trust. It was had about $1.2 million in it.
Wow.
All of a sudden, $25,000 here, $25,000 there. We start getting bills for visits. But I must tell you why they appointed a guardian. I've got to jump back to one part of the story. After Norheim refused to let us take Marcy to California and said that she couldn't come, Marcy begged us to take her. So what we did is we took her to California. We just left before there was any court order or anything. We took her to California, and we put her in a place called Sunrise Senior Assisted Living, where she was living in a private room, had meals. Heidi could see her every day and everything like that. So when the evidentiary hearing came, Marcy wasn't even a resident of Nevada. She was a resident of California. But Nevada, figuring that they had the rights, appointed this Jared Schaefer. So Schaefer starts billing the estate, and all of a sudden we see that there are these visits that occurred to Marcy at the Sunrise in California, which never occurred. We see that one month he'd pull $50,000 out of the trust, another month he'd pull $100,000 out of the trust, and money would just go out for absolutely no reason at all.
Hmm.
So we filed a petition in California to get California to exercise jurisdiction, because Marcy was a resident here, and to stop Jared Schaefer's attacking the estate. Well, what Schaefer did immediately once we did that is he got Lance Dudek, the son, the one who had the mother removed, where she was removed from the house, to take his mother back to Nevada. Now, there's another important element of the case, and it can be read. Lance had tested positive 3 times for the use of methamphetamine.
Oh.
So Schaefer gets him to take his mother, and he probably was on meth when he did it, across the desert back to Nevada. So they did it. Well, the mother gets taken back to Nevada, and within 4 months, she goes from 135 pounds to 122 pounds and dies of what we think is dehydration. And because what the deal with older people is, you got to have them drink water. Sometimes they won't. And they got to be coaxed. But Nevada, they just let her sit. She withered away, and she died alone with no visitors, nobody, when she had a family to take care of.
Hmm.
So after this point, Schaefer promptly let the estate out. Took about, it took $1.4 million. The house got sold, and we don't even know what the house was sold for. We never got an accounting because that was one of Schaefer's agreed deals that he wouldn't close the estate unless we would agree to not have an accounting. He dragged it out for about 3 years on that. And so on the bottom line, at the very end of the whole thing, it wound up that my wife only got about $8,000. Lance
Wow.
got $200,000 because he worked with Schaefer, and there's a lot that goes into that. And the bottom line is we were left with nothing. Schaefer, even as a retaliatory situation, there were a lot of things from my wife's past, like pictures of her prom, dates with her first boyfriend, pictures with the family. Schaefer actually went out of his way and called us several times and told us that he was destroying all of those things.
Oh, wow.
All right.
Wow.
Well, it gets even worse than that, because when we started the guardianship fight, Schaefer became very angry, because also I had turned him into the IRS, and he called me up and he said, and I'm going to put this on quotes, I've got a witness that, but because of the legal system, we've never been able to bring it to trial. Witness heard it on a phone. He says, I have been bribing judges for years.
Hmm.
He says, I've done this for years, and no, because I'm visually impaired. He says, no blind punk like you is going to stop me. And if you don't stop fighting me, bad things will happen to Marcy.
Wow.
This was in 2008. Marcy gets kidnapped in 2009, goes to Nevada, dies, so he actually makes good on his threat. Well, from that point, that began to teach me that the entire guardianship system was corrupt. And so what I did, I'll have to tell you, when Marcy first got taken, so that your audience is going to say, well, I'm listening to this guy, but what did he do about it? What did he try to do? Well, the first thing I did is I went to the police. And an officer, Charles Phillips, said, I refuse to take a report. We consider guardianship a family matter.
Hmm.
What was the next thing I did? I went to the Federal Bureau of Investigation because Marcy was taken across state lines. What did the FBI tell me, both in Los Angeles and Las Vegas? We refuse to get involved because guardianship is a family matter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's right, too. I then go to the Attorney General of California at that time, Jerry Brown, who's the governor, reporting to him what happened. Same response. We refuse to get involved because guardianship is a family matter. Well, then you start looking around and you go, this is a bad dream. How can this happen? So as time kind of went on in 2010, as we move a little bit forward, if you look on the net and you Google the GAO report, that's the Government Accountability Office. Well, that name's important, so let's focus on it.
Mm-hmm.
Government Accountability Office. What's got a report released on October 27th, 2010 to the public? And it states that the guardian problem is of guardians abusing seniors is in 45 states.
Wow.
Not just Nevada, but 45 states. They said they only studied 20 cases, but in the 20 cases they studied, they found over $5.4 million had been stolen from seniors. That's in only 20 cases, where there is 1.5 million people in guardianship. So that's a very important statistic. So if you look at 20 cases and 5.4 million, then I did some numbers and I said, well, if you took an average of 100,000 from each senior, because some we had a million and some had less, because it's over 100,000 that you'll get into guardianship, I came out with a figure of about $300 billion, if you just kind of did a general statistic. And so when they say that you have the elections right now, and candidates from both parties say that Medicare is fraught with fraud and all that kind of stuff, well, this is one of the frauds. This is a fraud that's probably costing our system $300 billion a year.
Wow.
Now, if you have that kind of money, $300 billion a year, look at the medication you could buy for seniors. Look at the drugs you could make sure that the drug costs for people would be lower. Look at the treatments you could have for Alzheimer's and the research you could have. And where is all this money going? Into the pockets of guardians. So then I started to, you know, my journey kind of came a little bit further. I said, okay, Schaefer admitted to me that he bribed judges. Schaefer admitted to me that bad things would happen to Marcy. Jared Schaefer admitted to me that he's been doing this for over 30 years. So I started looking and I said, is he the only one? No, he's not. I Googled a case this morning just before I came on, and your audience, Google it. Google the case of Barbara Lieberman, attorney, works back in New Jersey. She's now serving 10 years in prison for stealing from the elderly. She set up a whole network exactly like Jared Schaefer's. even down to the point where she had a doctor, Maria Declan, sign papers for elders saying that they weren't competent when they were, so she could put them into nursing homes and get them in guardianship. So she's in jail. But what happened to Schaefer? Well, Schaefer's assistant, Patience Bristol, P-A-T-I-E-N-C-E, Patience, B-R-Y-S-T-O-L, is now serving 3 to 8 years in Nevada State Prison for exploitation of the vulnerable. So elderly and vulnerable. So she's in jail right now. So Patience Schaefer's number one guardian assistant is in jail, but yet Patience is, yet Schaefer is untouched, but Patience is in jail. And she's going to stay there. I think she comes up for parole maybe next year. Whether she gets out or not is going to depend on what the audience, what's going to happen. All right. So you've got Patience in jail. Now, the next thing you got to take a look at is, how does this thing work? Well, I started looking and I started Googling around the net. And I see, okay, all of a sudden, a lady that coordinated conferences for NASA in the astronauts back in the days when we put the people on the moon, one of those 500,000 people that was in the team to put Neil Armstrong, Edgar Mitchell on the moon. Mm-hmm. She gets old. She lives in a trailer. She gets in a fight with her neighbor. She goes into guardianship. She loses everything. We go back down to Vegas, and we see a lady named Phyllis. I won't give her last name. All of a sudden, a neighbor says she's acting strange. Bam. She falls down, breaks her hip or something, and she gets better. But as she's recovering, she's on drugs. While she's recovering because of the pain, somebody says her behavior's strange, into guardianship, loses her home and her assets, so she can't fight back. Let's look at another Vegas guardian. The police just recently raided the home of a guardian in Vegas named April Parks. They took all the papers. They took everything. They raided her office. They virtually closed her down. We don't know when, if she's going to be indicted, but we know that the Henderson police have taken everything, and her papers are there, and they're all the papers that went to Parks are also in the hands of the new Nevada Attorney General. So we know that. Now, the other thing that I can say to you is that in looking into this and the talking to victims, I've learned we have another case that's even worse, and it's in Nevada. The case is of Jason Hansen. Now, Jason Hansen's only 26 years old. But why did he get into guardianship?
Yeah.
He got there because he had cerebral palsy. Oh. And that's the only reason. Fully competent, Derek, able to talk just as well as you and I. And what did and who was the guardian? Jared E. Schaefer. What did Jared E. Schaefer do? Actually, he had another lady named Frances Fine. They teamed up. Well, I'll get to that in a second. Frances Fine and Jared Schaefer get together. Well, Frances Fine was a judge who got kicked off the bench in 1998 for nepotism, but yet the Nevada Family Court let her and Schaefer be co-guardians of this kid's estate. They promptly take a house that's worth a couple of $100,000, and it gets sold for $47,000 cash. Now, that ought to sound very strange.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the typical guardian tricks. They'll take your house, sell it to a friend, a relative, or some buyer for cash, and then if they resell it or split the proceeds, whatever they do, the estate will never see it. And the guardians have another trick that they did with Hansen. They create a special needs trust. And you go, well, why would the guardian create a special needs trust? Because trusts don't have to go into the estate accounting. You can separate the funds into a trust, do what you want with them, steal them, rob them, whatever you can do, never have to present that to the court, so Hansen loses. So what happened to Hansen last week? He got a check from his attorney, which we'll get to in a minute. After over $200,000, he waits 9 years, and he finally gets a check. Are you ready for this? Your audience better hold their breath. $5,000.
Wow. Wow.
So he gets, and the same guardian, Jared E. Schaefer, is responsible for doing that. So now you've got that. Now, I also want to add in this interview, as I sort of pointed it out, we've got a lot of stories on Jared Schaefer. But I got to point out that we couldn't do this alone. This has been a massive team effort. And I want to talk about the members of my team, because I know a lot of them are going to want their names mentioned. first-time journalist, Steve Miller, former Las Vegas city councilman, writes a column inside Vegas for a paper called American Mafia.
In fact, I'm looking at that article right now, and I should point out, while people are listening to this, this may seem overwhelming and almost unbelievable, but in the 15 or 20 minutes that you've been talking, Charles, I have pulled up about 8 different articles that are documenting what you're saying, and I'll put links to all of these in the show notes when this gets posted at vftb.net, because this is startling that these charges that almost seem too big to be real are actually documented. So anyway, I'm looking at the Inside Vegas article by Steve Miller right as we speak, so continue.
I'll continue on it. So he comes in and he does this to Jason Hansen, and this poor kid, what happened? His father had a house specially built for him to live in with his cerebral palsy to accommodate wheelchair. Even the kitchen cabinets were built so he wouldn't have to reach up to get things. The stove was built so he could cook. The dishwasher was built so he could wash dishes. It was built so he could live on his own and have a life. And Schaefer, by selling the house and taking the cash, took it away. Where is he now? In a group home for the mentally ill and indigent in Las Vegas. The only thing he can do now is go to a place that's a very good place. It's an excellent place called Opportunity Village, where they make scarves and everything like that. But because of what Schaefer has done and the trauma that Schaefer has caused to this boy, he never got to college. He never got to have a life. And that life was stolen from him by Jared E. Schaefer. And so it shows you the cruelty. But there's something else. As you're in those articles, how can this happen? How can you have a man be that cruel?
Exactly.
Well, you look at Jared Schaefer's past. Google deeper into there, and you're going to see that Mr. Schaefer in 2008 pled no contest. I want to make sure I quote it right. No contest to selling securities without a license. Well, how could that happen? Well, you know, if you sell securities without a license, if you did it, Derek, or if I sold securities without a license, the company whose name was Vescor, and that'll be documented in your links, right there in Vescor, we would be in jail. Do you know what happened in Vescor? $800 million, Steve's got it in the article, $800 million of senior money was into a fraudulent scheme that was to build apartment complexes, but the thing went bankrupt. Jared Schaefer was selling securities in this without a FINRA, a license by FINRA, which is the organization that regulates stockbrokers. What did he plead? No contest. What did they give him? A $20,000 slap on the wrist. He shouldn't even be guardian. All right, that's one thing he's done. What is the other thing that Schaefer's done? I'm using him because he's kind of the poster child. Okay, 1978. Let's go back. And you know, this is funny how life does it. 1978, I was a stockbroker. There was a stock that came out called Gervitol H3. It was a drug that was supposed to make old people young. Most people died from that drug. The stock went from $3 to $27. I remember it very well. Who was the president of the Gervitol H3 company in Nevada? Jared E. Schaefer. There he comes again. Huh. Gervitol. So we got a guy that was president of a drug that killed people, Gervitol H3. We got a guy that was indicted for security fraud, indicted and pled no contest to security fraud, Jared E. Schaefer, but yet they let him be a guardian. Well, I'll go one step further. Okay, you've got the GAO report. What does the GAO report say from the Government Accountability Office? It gets better. It says, you know, this is happening in every state. Why is it happening? Because the courts are not communicating to federal agencies. Nobody's talking to anybody. So Schaefer pleads no contest to federal selling securities without a license, but he's allowed to continue in Nevada because Nevada never talked to the federal courts who accepted the no contest plea. Right in the GAO, organizations not communicating with each other. You've got, just like what happened, how many years did Barbara Lieberman continue to operate in New Jersey? The same thing. How long has Guardians in Florida, Texas, Washington, Utah, Montana, all of these cases. Well, this is why Michael Larson wrote his book, because he wanted to say, okay, I'm going to take as many of these articles as I can, and I'm going to start publishing them. And so what I'm doing as spokesperson for Michael is to connect the dots so that you can see. Now, a very interesting thing happened. I can't mention the name of this case, but it is one of the cases I'll say that's in the article. One of the cases is suing Jared Schaefer for RICO. And in that case, all of a sudden, the attorney got suspended by the Nevada Supreme Court for not properly returning phone calls. Well, sometimes attorneys don't return phone calls very well, and they may get a slap on the wrist. But to suspend the attorney for 3 months and put a 24-month probation on that attorney, the treatment, there was a crime, but the treatment for that crime was very, very harsh. So you start to wonder if the Supreme, if it goes all the way up to the Supreme Court, because what Nevada has done to fight this problem is that Steve Miller, through his articles, and I'll name another person, Ronna Goodman, who is a author of a paper called The Las Vegas Voice. Her and Dan Roberts, they run that paper. They ran articles. And then the third is Colton Lockhead from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Mm-hmm. They ran articles. They were able to get three laws passed in Nevada to get the guardianship laws, the out-of-state requirement, make guardians licensed and so forth, to bring the guardianships under control. But it's going to take years before, but the laws were passed, but from what I can see, nothing has been funded. But the other thing that's happened is that with all of this, the Nevada started a commission to stop this guardian abuse. But what has the commission done? Put some of the very same people on the commission that caused the problems. And that's why I'm coming back to that. The commission that's supposed to stop this guardian abuse has one attorney on it, and her name is E-L-Y-S-E, last name Tyrell, T-Y-R-E-L-L. And if you look into the Jason Hansen case, she is the attorney who helped Jared Schaefer steal the boy's money. Mm. So now she is on this commission supposedly to help clean up the problems.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see what they're doing. So the commission is there for one purpose, to preserve the status quo.
Right.
And I will give you another instance. I flew to the Nevada legislature in 2011. As you know, I've really been on this since 2009. I got there, and when I presented my case in front of the legislators, I was, I was drowned in a cesspool of platitudes. That's the best way I can say it. You can call it anything you want,
yeah.
But a cesspool of platitudes saying, oh, what a wonderful person you are. We'd like to help you. We want to solve these problems. But when you look at all those people in the commission, they all smiled. They all patted me on the back. In fact, from so many pats on the back, I had to go home, and I had to put something on my back from the blisters from all the patting. And I said, gee whiz. But they did absolutely nothing to solve the problem in 2011. They just thanked me, sent me on my way, and that's it. Now, I also want to mention something else about Elise Tyrell. In 2006, when we were first beginning to try to get this thing, I had a meeting with her. I was in her office because one of the attorneys that was deposing my wife when we were trying to get guardianship of Marcy, his name was Chris Phillips. He was working for Tyrell. Chris Phillips was deposing my wife. Tyrell walks into the office, and she sees me sitting there. She walks up to me while I'm sitting on the couch, and she just says, you think you're so smart. She says, we'll bleed your estate out just like we've done all the rest.
Wow.
She smiled at me and walked right in the office. And you know what? That's exactly what they did.
Hmm. Again, this just sounds so overwhelming. It almost sounds hard to believe. But again, as you're talking, I'm just trying to keep up with these numbers and these names that you're giving us and flagging them to go back and provide the articles to document the story, because these names are names that are popping up very easily with a Google search. So it's not like this information is hidden anywhere. This seems to be a conspiracy that's hiding in plain sight. So why isn't the public more aware of this?
Because what has happened, and it's taken me a while to look at it. Okay, let's go back to the GAO report. That's probably the best way. I always like to go back to the source. I'm a researcher. When I read the report, there's a line in that GAO report that says the federal government neither controls or regulates guardianships. So right there, the government has said that sounds like a very benign line. But if you look at that line from that GAO report, that throws everything back into the states. All right, so you say, okay, that's step one. Now, step two, who controls the laws in the states? The attorneys. So you have that. So now you've got the attorneys who control the laws. So now who is preserving the status quo? Well, you've got the guardians, but they can't do it without the family law attorneys backing it up. So now you have the family law attorneys. Well, who's going to support the family law attorneys? The judges. Okay, here's going to be your next explosive article. You got to go back to 2006 for this, but stand by. Google Juice, J-U-I-C-E, versus Justice. Again, I repeat, Juice versus Justice. What you're going to find there in Las Vegas is that in the criminal courts, attorneys put big money, contributions to judges, so that when they go in front of these judges, it would be favorable rulings. So if you have this in the criminal courts, I was already told by Jared Schaefer that the exact same thing happens in the family court. In fact, Schaefer told me on the phone, he was the one that told me about the LA Times article, Juice versus Justice.
Yeah, I've got that pulled up right now.
Yeah, you got it right there.
Yeah.
And then me as a little blind punk couldn't fight it. He actually said, you as a blind punk can't fight this because we've set this up. He says, I set it up, Jared Schaefer, since 1979, and nobody, set up, because he uses a lot of expletives, is going to get in my way for this, because I set up this system, and you're not going to change a damn thing. So right there, you've got Juice versus Justice. So now you have this network going. But now we're going to add one more, because I kind of got to come back. Schaefer wants to get an advantage. Well, Steve Miller's got an article, and he's documented it. Schaefer owns a company. You're going to say, well, this is kind of funny. What company is that? Signs of Nevada.
Hmm.
That's a Steve Miller article. Where he's, and if you Google it, Jared Schaefer signs become a public nuisance. Jared Schaefer signs become a public nuisance. So if you Google that, what you're going to find is that if you're a judge, the only way you're going to get elected is with billboards and signs, because judges and small-time officials, they can't put ads on radio and TV. You don't see it for
right.
A county court judge or a commissioner because they don't have that kind of money. But the way they get elected is they put their names on big billboards on the road. Well, guess who the attorney is? Elise Tyrell for the Signs of Nevada. She's the attorney for Schaefer for this. And guess what they do? Schaefer will give you free billboards and signs that he can run all over Las Vegas in exchange to these judges for favors in the court. So it isn't a direct bribe of money, but if you want to be a judge and you want to play ball with Schaefer and you want to run, Schaefer's got the biggest sign company. You use his signs. You get elected. You better rule his way, or the next time you run, you don't get any signs, because Elise Tyrell is the attorney for that company, Signs of Nevada.
Wow. Wow. This sounds like the plot from a weekly episode of some cop show.
It would be. The problem is that it's very complex, and to try to take it down, in a cop show, it would all move very fast.
Right.
You have Jared Schaefer out there, and we'd maybe put a couple of young 20-year-old prostitutes on his knee, and we'd make him look real good. And there'd be a cop like Howard Duff that would come in and go, Jared Schaefer, I'm going to get you, or Jack Webb going, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. And within 1 hour, it would all be busted, and Jared Schaefer would be hauled off to prison going, I should have been an honest man.
But it never works that way. Yeah.
That's what would happen.
Yeah.
What was that again?
I was going to say, it never works that way. We've got some family members who are in law enforcement, and it never moves as quickly as it does on television. And the tragedy is that for some people, it doesn't move at all. At least not quickly enough to save Marcy Dudek.
That's right. Marcy lost it. And here's the thing. When it's all said and done, the family members like all these different people. Like Ron Goodman would tell you from the Las Vegas Voice, they're left broke. They can't, we can't, like for what they took for Heidi, there's no way I could mount an attack, an attorney to do anything. Because of the amount of money bled dry. The Guardian does one thing. He bleeds the money, or like Barbara Lieberman, she ran one just like Schaefer in the East Coast. They bleed you so dry, and they do it for a purpose. The purpose is to make sure that you can't fight back. Because as your audience listens to this, the first thing somebody's going to say is, well, they could get an attorney on contingency. Well, try to find one. That's like finding the tooth fairy or a unicorn or the little leprechauns out there saying, I wish we could go. You know, I had to do that, but that's really what you got. All this kind of stuff for nothing. You're not going to find a contingency attorney. They're not out there. Hmm. And they're not going to come and take a case on contingency, because to get these guardians, it's going to be 5 and 10 years of work. And when you finish it, you may wind up with nothing, especially if the judge on the other end winds up with your signs or some kind of other contribution, that even though you write the best brief in the world and you have the best case sites, they're all shepherdized and they're all come from LexisNexis, you are not going to win, because of the fact of the matter is your court was already thrown before you ever went in there.
Hmm. Well, in the last 10 minutes or so, Charles, let's talk about some advice that people can use to keep their parents and older relatives, yeah, out of this system. How do you avoid getting your mother or father into the jaws of something,
okay,
like this?
I've got a few things to do about that, and thank you, because I am a trained counselor. First of all, because of what has happened today, families need to communicate. A lot of families become estranged because of a lot of senseless trivia. He said this to me, he did that to me. Well, when your parents get older, you got to be adults, and you got to put that aside. That's number one. Number two, family members, all family members should get together and draft a plan as to what we're going to do, how you're going to do it. You want to create a will, and you want to create a trust, and you want to talk to a very good attorney that can make a trust that is very difficult to break. You can't say, well, it can't be broken or something like that, but you can say, in a legalistic sense, one that is very difficult to break. So the family creates a very, very good trust. Number three, if there's a family member that can take care of the parents, do it. That's the next thing. But number four, a lot of times, and this is going to get a lot of families, there are states like Nevada that are out there, retirement states especially, that they entice seniors to go there on the basis of having low taxes or no taxes and a beautiful lifestyle and a condominium. But those states have laws that won't let out-of-state relatives become a guardian. So if your parents are going to move to a state, you've got to check the laws inside those states to see what's going on. Because if your parent becomes incapacitated in that state, it can happen. Because here's what can happen to your parents. Let's say mom moves to Nevada before the law passed. I think Florida has a law that says out-of-state relatives can't be guardians. So we'll use Florida. Hmm. All right. Let's say they move to Florida or Nevada. And all of a sudden, the parents become sick. Mom gets the flu. Mom gets bronchitis. Mom gets a minor heart attack. Goes in the hospital. But the son or the daughter lives in Oregon. Okay. Well, then what's going to happen is that all of a sudden, there could be a predator nurse or a predator caregiver that gets a referral fee from a guardian that spots this person. Person's medicated. Somebody comes to see them and pretends to be their friend. And the next thing you know, those seniors have, in a legitimate hospital, sign away their name, the power of sign over power of attorney to somebody, and the next thing you know, their account is bled completely dry. So to understand that all hospitals, all doctors are not the good guys. Now, also in some of these retirement states, there are attorneys that go around to these communities and pretend to be good guys, family planning experts. And what they are is they'll give a seminar, they'll provide tax laws to your parents, telling your parents that everything is going to be fine if they just sign this or do this or do that. Well, those those are basically like a Trojan virus that you put in the computer.
Hmm.
Parents signs, they make a friend with the attorney. The attorney does their taxes for 3 or 4 years and pretends to be a good friend. And then all of a sudden, when that parent loses health, that virus goes in and attacks. That's what happened to the Dudek. There was a guy named Jeffrey Burr that was done with the Dudex that did that. He pretended to be their friend. He pretended to take them to seminars. He pretended to set up tax things to help them with their trust. And then the minute they got sick, he pulled the trigger and made sure that there started things happening after Marissa called the cops. So you see, the bottom line is those are the traps you can get into to understand that if your parents are out of state, they could be in a place where there's predators, and it's up to you as kids, meaning in your 50s, in your 60s, to really check the environment that your parents live in, because your parents are like hunted animals by these people who will catch them, shoot them down, and steal their assets.
Wow. Well, again, as I mentioned off the air before this program, my mother is about to turn 79 years old, and thankfully she only lives about 25 minutes away from us. So she moved out here to Missouri when we came to the Ozarks a year ago, March, and I've been able to drop in on her a couple of times a week, very pleased with where she's living and what is going on in her life right now. But her tendency to take in stray cats notwithstanding, but that's another story. But the fact is, it's time, the time to investigate and be prepared for the type of abuse that you're describing, Charles, is right now, before somebody worms his or her way into their lives and gets in between that senior and their children and or the family.
That's right, because if your family is not communicating, the very first thing, and it's on our on Michael Larson's website, Guardian Abuse Cases, Guardian Abuse Tactics, the guardian will immediately attempt to turn one family member against another. That happened in our family. It's happened in so many different victims. You go, well, why would a guardian want to turn a sister against a brother or an uncle against a cousin? Or that type of thing. Because once the guardian creates a conflict, the guardian then can bill the courts for attempting to resolve the conflict that they, the guardian, created. So your family has to be in tight communication with each other to know, because these guardians have done this with many families, and they know how to get the family members to fight.
Divide and conquer. It's time-tested.
Exactly.
Yep. Well,
time-tested strategy.
Yes,
in World War II, so that's one of the best disruptive tactics there is.
Yeah.
Nazis used it all the time.
Well, it goes back thousands of years. It's nothing that the Germans invented. They just were really, really good at it.
That's right.
Where do people look on the web for advice, for direction on guardian abuse?
I'll give you a couple of sites. Our site is brand new. It's guardianabusecases.com, but I'm going to give another website. National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse. This site is run by Elaine Renoir, beautiful person. She has done a lot. National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, that's one. There is another one that run by Dr. Sam Sugar, S-U-G-A-R. It's A-A-A, Alpha, 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 Papa Golf, A-A-A-P-G. Both of those websites have a lot of review. A lot of sites. And I think there's another called National Society for Elder Law Attorneys, also has advice. So start with those three websites. National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse. Go to AAAPG. Go to the National Organization for Elder Law Attorneys. Go to all three of those sites. And what you're going to get is some sound advice to begin to look out as to what can happen and how you can stop some of this stuff, because there are people out there that really want to solve this problem. So I'd start with those three and then read the Forbes article that just came out. It was in 2015 on guardianship. And I think there was a law professor there, business from a Diablo College up in San Francisco, a lady's name. I think her name was Laham, L-A-H-A-M. Is the last name, Professor Laham. She wrote a book on how to protect yourself against guardianship. Very smart. Our book, of course, again, are guardian abuse cases, but I'm just giving you as many sources as you can to let you know that they are out there and people can get the help if they need it.
And I will put links to all of these in the show notes. And I always encourage people to go to the show notes at vftb.net, but especially for this program, because there will be a lot of links, more than usual, in this particular episode. The book, New, by Michael Larson, just released on February 16th, Guardianship, How Judges and Lawyers Steal Your Money. Our guest, Charles Pascal, who, like Michael, has endured a nightmare that, as Americans, we think just couldn't possibly happen under our legal system. But sadly, it does. And Charles, we thank you for sharing that with us today.
I really appreciate the opportunity. And the most important thing, I hope, is, sure, I want Mike's book to be sold, but I also, Mike and I also want to have as many people as we can be helped, because this is a problem that is out there. It's kind of like the dirty little secret in our society, and people need to be aware that it's out there, because it's one of those things that will bite you when you least suspect it.
After every program, I suggest that you check out the show notes at vftb.net, but for this episode especially, I highly recommend that you do, because I'm going to put links to a number of articles that I pulled up during the interview with Charles that document much of what he was saying, and then also, of course, lead you to the groups that he recommended as for more information and assistance if you are sadly in need of such, in helping an elderly relative or friend or neighbor, member of your church, perhaps, who has fallen into the clutches of one of these professional guardians. No doubt there are some who are conscientious and try to do the best they can for their clients, but sadly, there's not much in life that makes me angrier than one who takes advantage of somebody who's not in a position to really help themselves. The elderly, children, it is absolutely reprehensible that this is allowed to go on, and that this isn't better known. That we, as a society, have come to a place where our families are so separated, so cut off from one another, which is exactly the enemy's plan, which is why the enemy spends so much time and effort trying to dissolve the family bonds through the lie that parents are not really necessary for the raising of children. All it takes is a village. That fathers aren't really necessary in a child's life. That children should be allowed to make their own decisions regarding things such as their own sexuality before they reached double digits in age. Our culture, our world, is has become so open-minded that its collective brain has fallen out. And on the other end of the spectrum, that our elders are so little respected in our Western culture, because we praise and value youth above all things, that they are prey for these predators who seek to enrich themselves on the life's work of other people. So my thanks to Charles Pascal. The book by Michael Larson, there'll be a link to that in the show notes as well on guardianship. And I will include a link to the interview from 2006 that led to the contact between Michael Larson and us, the interview with Janet Phelan about her mother, Dr. Emily Phelan, who was a victim of this scam and whose story was drawn upon by Michael Larson for the book. Not much in the way of other things to discuss tonight. In closing, Sharon and I, as you know, were traveling earlier this week, and so we were out of town and kind of out of touch for several days. So I've not been keeping up as much with the news, except to say that I'm not surprised that we're one day into the ceasefire that was supposed to go into effect in Syria, and it's already been violated. Russians are dropping, continuing with their airstrikes in the area around Aleppo. The situation there took a strange turn earlier in the week when the Islamic State managed to cut the only supply route from the southeast to the government forces of Bashar al-Assad around Aleppo. So I didn't expect that the Russians were going to hold up on their bombing, nor did I expect, I didn't expect really anybody to abide by the ceasefire. Nobody really had a motive to. Because the battle for Aleppo, which is Syria's largest city, is essentially a battle for all the marbles. And if the government forces there, backed, of course, by Russian air power, Iranian troops, and Hezbollah fighters, is able to defeat the rebel groups around Aleppo. Al-Nusra Front, the Islamic State, several other so-called moderate rebel groups. The war is essentially over, and the rebellion has essentially been defeated. So expect that to continue. Meanwhile, I saw a story, and again, I've not had a chance to really dig into this because I've only this afternoon, as I record this on Sunday, the afternoon of February 28th, started digging back into the news to prepare for tomorrow's updates on Skywatch TV, but saw that an ISIS attack in Baghdad has apparently killed more than 80 people, which is, an extremely deadly attack, even for them. So more on this and other stories as we get back into the news tomorrow on Skywatch TV. It is kind of amusing, by the way, and I want to preface these comments by saying that I am not in any way, shape, or form saying that I endorse any candidate for president. But I will say that it's been awfully darned entertaining watching Donald Trump kick the Republican establishment in the pants all through this election cycle, all through this campaign. When he first announced his campaign last year, I heard the announcement in real time, and he was speaking off the cuff and wasn't especially eloquent. You might remember some of those comments too about Mexico sending us their rapists and not the best people, that sort of thing. And I thought, okay, well, this is going to be a sideshow for a little while, but this will fade as soon as people get tired of the sideshow act. But just as I was wrong about Howard Stern 30 years ago, when I wrote an op-ed piece for, letter to the editor, not an op-ed piece, to Billboard magazine, saying that Howard Stern was a flash in the pan. And of course, he's gone on to an even longer career in the latter half of his broadcasting career than he did early on. And by then, he'd already made it to New York City, the number one radio market in the country. I was totally wrong about Howard Stern. Apparently, I've also been totally wrong about Donald Trump, because a professor at Stony Brook University, which is, I believe, Long Island. Anyway, he says that his algorithms have been able to predict the winners at this point in the campaign, looking back historically over the data for the last 100 years. He's predicted accurately every one of the presidential winners except for one. And so he's estimating the odds of Trump becoming our next president at 97% to 99%. Now, I know there are progressives out there who are screaming in terror at the prospect of a Donald Trump presidency. But even more than that, what I find really amusing are the Republican elites who are doing the same thing, going so far as to call in a consulting firm to try to find ways to derail the Trump candidacy. He has succeeded when, far beyond what they thought was possible. And I think it is freaking out the Republican administration or the establishment that their chosen candidate, who was Jeb Bush, their chosen plan B, Marco Rubio, have not been able to gain any traction against Trump. And there's an article in the New York Times today that, if anything, will deflate whatever air is left in Marco Rubio's balloon. Senator Rubio, it is reported in the New York Times today, back in 2013, as he joined that so-called Gang of Eight to push for immigration reform, went with New York Senator Chuck Schumer to a private dinner in the corporate headquarters of News Corp, that is the parent company of Fox News, to talk with Rupert Murdoch, the owner of the media empire, and Roger Ailes, who is the chairman and chief executive of the Fox News division, to persuade them to let the anchors and commentators on Fox News know that they would really, really appreciate their support in helping to promote to the American public, to the conservative American public, the benefits of immigration reform. Mr. Ailes very wisely pointed out that, and by the way, this is the first time that news of this dinner has been reported, which is why I'm saying this could end whatever was left of Senator Rubio's candidacy. because you bet conservative talk radio hosts like Rush Limbaugh and Laura Ingraham will be all over this tomorrow. Mr. Ailes suggested to Senators Rubio and Schumer that they reach out to Rush Limbaugh because of his influence with conservative voters. And apparently they did, but Mr. Limbaugh apparently not interested in carrying any water for this immigration reform. So, news of this little secret dinner where Rubio, on behalf of the elites in the Senate pushing immigration reform, trying to persuade Fox News to get on board with this plan, certainly not going to help his case any. And if anything, it may show that Trump was right in picking his little feud with Fox News. I mean, have we forgotten 4 years ago that, was it 4 years ago, 8 years ago, Rupert Murdoch was hosting fundraising dinners for Hillary Clinton. So Fox News is not your friend. If you're a conservative news viewer, yeah, maybe on a scale of acceptability, it's preferable to MSNBC or CNN. But don't for a minute think that Fox News actually supports true conservative values. Donald Trump is almost certainly a megalomaniac. But when you think about it, I mean, step back and think about this for just a moment. Would you or anyone you know who is in their right mind, sound of mind, willingly subject themselves or their families to the kind of media scrutiny you have to endure when you run for president? The obvious answer is, of course, no. Which means, by definition, we Americans consistently elect people to the highest office in the land, arguably the most powerful political position on the planet, who are, by definition, clinically insane. So Trump is the only one, and Trump is the only one on either party, who has successfully led other people in any kind of an endeavor. Now, don't mistake that for an endorsement of his character, nor am I saying he would make a good president. I'm just saying that the American voters are picking up, Republican voters anyway, picking up on the fact that Trump has done something that might be useful in the Oval Office that none of the other candidates have demonstrated an ability to do. I don't know why Republican elites think that Marco Rubio is a good alternative or preferable alternative to Donald Trump. I was listening to Michael Medved as I was driving around this weekend, the weekend version of his daily talk show. I've lost all respect for Mr. Medved. He clearly is kowtowing to the elites of the Republican Party, claiming that Mr. Trump is going to lead to the absolute destruction of the conservative movement and the Republican Party. And if that is true, then I say, well, then it's about time, because we out here in flyover land have time and again been told it's the most importantest election ever, and we must vote Republican to stop this slide into a progressivist quagmire from which we will never return. And we have dutifully lined up and voted Republican election after election after election, and time again. It's like Charlie Brown missing the football as Lucy pulls it away once again, and he falls flat on his back. The Republicans that we voted for time and time again haven't done us any favors. As a Christian, I'm not putting my faith in the government to save us anymore anyway. If we really want to turn the country around morally, ethically, then we need to go out and make more disciples. We need to preach the gospel, make disciples, and start a true grassroots movement of changing hearts. Because imposing morality through legislation, imposing, for example, the biblical definition of marriage on people who don't agree to it. Well, maybe that's a better, well, forget it. I'm making a short story long, but I've made this point before. We're not going to elect Jesus into the White House, and so our salvation is not going to come through the ballot box. Yes, I understand that to a point you can legislate and should legislate morality, but the bottom line is, if enough people accept the biblical standard of morality as absolutely authoritative, a lot of the laws that Christian activists are pushing for, and many of the reasons that we're told we need to elect a Republican president so we can get the next Supreme Court justice appointed by a Republican president, will be moot. The arguments will be moot. They'll be unnecessary. So anyway, it's amusing theater. I'm not saying don't vote. We as Christians do have a responsibility as American citizens to be good citizens and to cast our votes in accordance with our best understanding of Christian principles and what those candidates, how those candidates represent them. But again, having said that, sometimes the best man for the job is just a real ass. Pardon my French, but that is what it's coming down to, because it's beginning to appear that our choices right now are going to come down to Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Who are you going to call? Lord, come quickly. Coming up on A View from the Bunker, Bill Salas has a new book out called The Now Prophecies. We're scheduled to talk this week. Just a reminder, I'm going back to a once-a-week schedule, just trying to keep up with twice a week. Well, you can see how well I've been able to keep that up over the past few months. So we'll do once a week and hold to that, posting these new programs on Sunday evenings, as has been the custom in years past. Bill Salas, the new book, The Now Prophecies, and hopefully we'll be able to get him out to the Ozarks fairly soon and see him face-to-face, I guess, for the first time since Pike's Peak 2 years ago. So we look forward to that. Next week, we also restart the Gilbert House Fellowship. We took this week off because of our travel. Weren't really prepared to discuss the Word of God, but we will be back next week with a New Testament and an Old Testament study. If you want to get a head start on the readings, you'll find those posted at gilberthouse.org. This Tuesday night, Timothy Alberino joins us on Skywatch TV. The program deals with the documentary series True Legends. So if you've appreciated the shorter interviews during the daily updates in recent weeks, boy, this is going to be a powerful 30 minutes, action-packed, a lot of information there, and really looking forward to the next installment of True Legends, the series. Skywatch TV airing this week multiple times, tomorrow on the Victory Television Network, Tuesday twice, the Victory Television Network and the Christian Television Network, Wednesday afternoon on the Cornerstone Network, and then next Saturday twice again in the afternoon on the Victory Television Network and the evening on the Christian Television Network. And if you want to find out exactly the times and the places to view the program, log on to skywatchtv.com and then look in the very top menu bar where it says channel listing. We got it all right there. We appreciate your reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you find A View from the Bunker. And please stop by our page on Facebook and give us a like there. A View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House and released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod. His website is incompetech.com. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.